Celebration 25. 25 years of making new friends, of holding hands with Southern California. News, information, and entertainment. Join Celebration 25 with
Bill Jenkins.
Welcome. It's a Saturday night on KABC, and that means that it's open mind. From now till midnight. And we're here to open your mind. To give it a little something to think about. Something new, perhaps, some of you. Something different. But something that we feel is real, or we wouldn't spend our time or yours to talk to you about. Tonight we're going to be dealing very deeply with, basically, the near-death experience. But the near-death experience brings on a whole multitude of other things that are a part of the reality of the world that we live in today. But let's start with the near-death experience. And for that, we have, well, I couldn't think of anybody more qualified to talk to you about it, to get into its ramifications, to get into its history, into its meaning, than Diane Morrissey. She is the regional coordinator for the International Association of Near-Death Studies, which is headquartered in Connecticut University. Diane, welcome to Open Mind.
Thank you, Bill.
The near-death experience is not something anymore, I think, that you just hear about every now and then. It seems to be something that's going on all the time.
It happens to many, many people all over the world in every continent.
Basically, let's give us a little thumbnail description of what the classic near-death experience is, or can we do that?
We can.
I thought maybe we might be able to.
There are a few things that most people don't encounter, but it basically starts by finding oneself with all consciousness within that self out of one's physical body.
Oh, they're going out of body again.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And noticing first that they see the body, this astral form or spiritual form, whatever. We have many names for it. We're not sure what it's called. And they can experience sometimes actually seeing through themselves and seeing where it is that they have had this near-death experience, the structure around them, their home, the hospital, whatever. And then they pass through a dark place or a tunnel. And after one leaves the tunnel, they sometimes come to a very bright white or golden loving light, and sometimes leave this, they experience a knowingness of all things and feeling very one with the universe and tremendous peace and love beyond anything that is humanly possibly capable of describing. It's fantastic.
All right, now Diane, you know, I'm sitting here talking to you, and of course a lot of this, the things that you just told me, we have touched on this show before, but I'm so interested in you being here. This is your first time. You're with a group that has taken onto itself the idea of studying this, shall I use the word, I shouldn't, but I shall for a moment, phenomenon of the near-death experience. I don't think there's anything phenomenal about death. We have to experience that all the time. I think what's phenomenal is the approach that we give death in the Western world. But you talk about the tunnel. You talk about the life, and you talk about the light at the end of the tunnel. The serenity. And that has always impressed me, because it's not just one or two or three people talking.
No, that's true. There's been
hundreds of thousands of people
talking.
From all walks of life, from all languages, from all cultures, and they don't cross-talk with each other as if they read somebody's book. Now, it impresses me that if you were a scientist at Caltech or at UCLA and you started getting this kind of enormous independent observation of something going on in the universe or in the world from that many people, that all at once that would become a very big scientific thing.
Well, I believe that's why IONS was created, because they provide research material and aid to those who want to study the near-death experience all across the country.
Mm-hmm. What I was trying to get to, Diane, is that there is a transition of the consciousness of the human being, it seems.
Yes.
It makes this transition in a rather consistent way. as consistent as the laboratory experiments that we could conduct at all of our universities if we were dealing with electromagnetics or some other form of science. And with that kind of consistent observation from that many observers, that would in science be said is one of those laws.
Valid.
Valid. But here we live in the Western world where we have to deal now not with reason, but with religion.
True.
And there is a vast difference. And people don't want to believe this, that all of these hundreds of thousands of people are lying, or we're hallucinating,
mm-hmm.
or we're doing all of these things.
Well, times are changing because there are definitely a lot more believers now than there ever have been.
Well, the facts of the matter are the facts of the matter.
Right, because some of the scientists themselves are having near-death experiences.
Yes, indeed. Isn't that interesting? Doctors who have to listen to the patients telling them what the doctors were saying while they were operating on them.
Correct. Which would be impossible if one is supposedly totally unconscious and not aware of his surroundings.
Are doctors finding out that people are not unconscious necessarily?
Even in the comatose state, people are able to report back who came to the room, what was said, how many times they came in the room, and the discussions that took place with the doctors. So there may be a similarity here between that, or there may not be. It's hard to know.
Isn't it curious? You know, how long are we going to say, isn't it curious that this could happen?
For sure.
It happens time and time and time and time again. And all the doctors seem to want to do is to say, well, isn't it curious?
Correct.
How about finding out about what's going on there?
Well, now there's enough groups. IANS has members in every continent in the world,
mm-hmm.
with the exception of the Antarctic. And
well, population down there,
yes.
last count was, what, seven?
Right.
Okay, so you missed one of those people.
Right. But there is a major interest now forming across all lands because people look and seek for reasons why this experience may have happened to them. Why did it pick them if indeed there is a choice involved here? And sometimes in coming back, they wonder if they weren't crazy or is it a moment of insanity or whatever. Because if it doesn't fit into their prior belief system, they have a hard time coping and or explaining the experience to other people later.
You know, we call it the reality box around here.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has a reality box.
True.
And that reality box is shaped by your living experiences.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good reason. Are the living experiences of people whom you trust and have great confidence in, your education, your religions, a lot of things shape your reality box. The problem with that reality box is that we so jealously guard it. Because if anyone were to give us information that's outside of that reality box,
we think they're wrong.
We immediately say, no, you're lying. You're trying to deceive me. Or
that's
you're
right.
crazy. Or some other thing. And even if it is the perception of our own senses, like ourselves having a near-death experience, we immediately, instantaneously say, well, maybe I better go see the shrink. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm going over the deep end, or I was hallucinating. That's how jealously we guard the parameters of that reality box, which indeed is the window through which we can view reality.
Mm-hmm.
But for most people, it isn't a window at all, Diane. It is a peephole.
That's true. It's very real.
And what we're trying to do is to expand your reality box. And we want to try to expand yours tonight about what happens when we transcend from physical life to another life.
The other side.
The other side. Do we go to heaven or hell? Is it fire and brimstone, or is it something else altogether? It is my belief, and I'm now expressing my belief, that there is no such thing as heaven or hell or fire and brimstone. And that may be a little bit shocking to you, me being at one time a Church of Christ preacher. But I think we can distribute that and show you that tonight and give you some very good reasons for thinking about that tonight. If you're going to tell me it's brimstone and fire and hell and heaven, the only data that you have is a book that was written thousands of years ago by mystics.
I'm sure
we have something else to talk to you about tonight.
At one time in my life, I might have believed that. And in 1977, I had a near-death experience, which changed my entire life.
I want to get into that. what caused you to get into this extremely fascinating subject, because it dovetails into so many of the things that are happening in the world around us right
That's
now.
True.
We have to learn that there is a great correlation between physical life and spiritual life. There is an obligation that goes back and forth between this. We are now having little windows between the two, and we want to discuss those windows with you. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. Further, I have this little feeling than just people who pass through this little ebb called near death, doesn't it?
Yes. It's a major endeavor looking beyond the consciousness.
It really has a great deal to do with the way we are and what we think and how we view the world.
Right.
How did you get involved in this? And why?
I was getting ready to have a party in my home and...
You didn't invite me.
That's true. But I didn't know you then.
True.
Anyway, I noticed that the fish tank had started to leak, and I leaned over to pick up the tubing, and as I did, the curlers in my hair bumped the edge of the aquarium, and the water from the tank coming out of the tubing squirted in my mouth, which was backing up through the pump.
The water from...
It's very hard to explain.
You got fish water in your mouth.
Yes, which was backing up through the pump prior to this without my knowledge, and so I was electrocuted by the water from the tank.
Zapped by the old fish tank. Right?
Yes, and I found myself standing out of my body. I was totally aware that everything I think and feel with was now standing, looking down at my physical body.
You do that too.
Yes.
What am I going to do with you people?
Well, maybe help get you out tonight.
Okay.
And during that experience, I went through several tunnels, not just one.
That's interesting. I've never heard about several tunnels.
Oh, not
one
just
I've
one.
Heard about, but...
Not
yeah.
just one, several. Several times. Maybe it was the same tunnel. I have a hard time knowing, but I entered through the tunnel, went through it, and I came back in the house and walked around for some time, and then I would go through the tunnel again. And I met a woman on the other side.
Let me get the picture. You had the incident with the fish tank.
True.
Which was physically traumatic to you.
I was electrocuted.
You were electrocuted. You were in a little bit of physical trouble.
True.
Went down the tunnel. Why didn't you go all the way through the tunnel the first time?
I can't answer that. I don't know.
You don't know. But you came back in the out-of-body state... And now you're walking through the house.
I spent much time looking through the house. The first reaction, I wanted to save the physical body. And I walked over...
Where was the physical body during this time?
Laying right below me.
Below the fish tanker, I presume?
Yes, close to it.
Now you're walking around the house, though.
Correct. I walked around for some time, and I...
Through the walls and through the doors
through,
and windows?
Through the walls. The very first wall that I passed through was to get to the telephone to call for help.
You didn't want to take a shortcut and go through doors. You just went through the walls.
It wasn't even something I thought of. I reached out to call on the phone, and as I did, I extended my right hand, put it on the receiver, and went to grasp the receiver and realized that my hand went through the telephone. I actually looked at my right hand for blood, and when there wasn't any, I guess I did this, to the best recollection, is because I thought, well, I must be bleeding if I pass through something.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that that had happened. I looked at my hand, and the best way I can tell you is to just give you an exclamatory remark about it. I looked at the hand and simply went, like, how about that? But I wasn't amazed. I wasn't awed. I was curious is the best way I could explain it. But it was like something that has happened to me every day of my life, but this was the first time that I saw it.
Well, let me ask you, had you ever read about, thought about, discussed in any way this phenomena that we would talk about as the out-of-body experience before
My
then?
Prior belief system was so definitely against everything in the paranormal field, not just, I didn't even know what an out-of-body was, so I can't even tell you that it's not just out-of-body, because I had no idea what a near-death experience was or an out-of-body. I had never had them.
I'm like you, I'd never heard about it until this show.
So until that event, I was totally aware that I was out of my body, but I didn't know that it was called an out-of-body experience when I returned. I simply knew that I was walking around in my home and my body was below me. When I was taken to the emergency later, the doctors and the emergency ward actually asked me, he says, did you see your body from above?
The doctors asked you that?
Yes. And I said, Why, yes, but inside I'm thinking, how could he know that? I haven't told him that I could see my body from above. So he knew, because the paramedics were there, that I was dead for a time, and they couldn't revive me, and it ended up I woke up on my own. But that is the time that I had that near-death experience.
Have you found, let me progress with you just a little bit.
Okay.
I presume that you have attempted to talk to doctors and paramedics and people who are first on the scene, let's say, to those who are in this, out of this strange thing that happens to most. Are they beginning to talk about it more?
They are, and I would say it could even be 50-50 in the medical field and the scientific field. There's hardly anything written negatively about the near-death experience because people really can't dispute it, because what's happened is they'll try to do that, but how can they fight with someone who says, hey, this is what happened, it's real, and I can't explain it?
You almost have to look at a person who has gone through this and can, as it happens so many, many times, say, in the out-of-body state, this is what I experienced. This is what you said. This is what happened.
Right.
And when their recollection of that is accurate, we have to call that empirical evidence.
It is, to a sort, and it's hard to explain.
It's empirical an evidence, in my mind, as it would be if it were somebody who was in the physical at all times.
Mm-hmm. There's many things that happened to me during that experience that I still don't understand, that I still have no English words for in any dictionary to describe what I felt, because it is beyond that.
You want to try Spanish?
Wouldn't help. I just don't think so.
You want to try just trying to impart a burst of feeling and thought?
It was the most fantastic thing that's ever happened to me.
You were in the near-death experience, and in fact, clinically, you were dead.
For about 23 minutes.
Were you ever bothered by this?
The very first day out of the hospital, I started trying to find out what had happened. And
I think I would want to, too.
I couldn't understand it. It didn't make any sense in the college background I'd had or anything in my religion. Nothing could give me an answer as to what had happened. And the doctors didn't use the term near-death experience. They just said that I was dead for a time. That's all.
You know why they didn't?
Because maybe they didn't know then.
No, it wasn't in their little books.
Oh. No, some doctors, I do believe now, are extremely open about the experience. I mean, the first and foremost, Raymond Moody, and mm-hmm. wrote the book Life After Life, and that's very important because certainly was aware that many of the patients in that hospital had the same experience.
You know, it's interesting to me that there have been books after books. There has been research. There has been documented cases, thousands of them. I guess hundreds of thousands of them, Diane. Right?
8 million. Just adults.
Just 8 million. I like that figure.
1982?
So now we have these people who are making these reports. Let's call them that. These empirical reports. But yet we have those that sit in the medical profession and the psychiatric profession. It is not in their books, and therefore it isn't so. These people were all either lying or hallucinating, which is
true.
Basically the point that our establishment, medical and psychiatric community comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And they really need to get off their high horse.
Can I talk about a newspaper review? Is that okay on the air?
You certainly may, but you can do that after I talk about something else here.
Okay, good.
We're going to do something. I'm with Diane Morrissey tonight. And I'm on your side, Diane.
Terrific.
We're talking about the near-death experience. I'm delighted that Diane is here because I think a great change in her life happened when she indeed experienced the near-death experience. And from that point on, she wanted to find out more about it. She's now the regional coordinator for the International Association of Near-Death Studies. That should give you a clue right there. That it happens so much to so many people around the world that there is an international organization to find out more about the significant meaning of what this is to us in our physical life, because there are great lessons to be learned there. we see personalities totally changed because of that. Why do they change? What do you find out?
I know I certainly did. And I've met at least 10 people who've had near-death experiences. Some very significant ones, some very small ones. Yet the personality, the person changes so much after the experience. So that's what more IANS is about, to study even the after effects and to understand how these transpersonal transformations of the physical body take place, because they seem to want to reach out more to help other people, to get spiritually involved with the universe in some specific manner, not a general one, and help other people.
Does it have anything to do with... I'm not trying to be flippant with you at all, or metaphysical in any way, but life's mission.
Oh, I'm sure it does. That's my personal belief. I don't think it's an accident that these people who've had near-death experiences, that many of them experience psychic phenomena starting to happen to them when this has never, ever happened to them. They don't discuss it. It is, you know, for some people, considered satanic prior to this, mm-hmm. and suddenly start having, not a tremendous amount, but for some, many people have psychic experiences after the NDE.
You know, I'm kind of glad you mentioned that, because we do get into the subject quite often on these Saturday nights together. Quite often, I spend hours on the telephone and certainly get an enormous amount of mail from people who are very, very sincere in their beliefs. It's their belief structure that this is satanic stuff. They will cite me, you know, various readings from the Bible to try to support their belief system. But I really think it's time to get away from the mysticism of it. And we have to look at the Bible as a mystic writing as much as anything else.
I think it's real, and I'm different than the Kabbalistic material or the Tao or the Zen or the Buddhist.
Well, don't get me wrong. I have enormous respect for the great intelligence and the great guidelines that are given in the Bible, and not only the majesty of it, but the mathematical symmetry of it. It could not be achieved today. So certainly it came from forces greater than ourselves. So I'm not really putting down the Bible.
No,
I'm putting down what we sometimes read in what it has to say. But we're now dealing with things that are not mystic. We're dealing with empirical reporting. If it was just by 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 1,000 people, okay, so everybody, you know, was drinking the same brew 102. But this isn't the case.
No, it isn't.
We're dealing with people from all walks of life, from all cultures, from all religions, and quite often what they have experienced totally violates their closely held belief system. So we're dealing with something that's very serious, and out of this now is something to be learned by us. Particularly in the United States, when we think about the near-death experience, we think about the awesome fear that the Western culture in particular, the Judeo-Christian culture, has developed about this thing called death.
Mm-hmm. I think we're afraid to talk about it here.
The world.
And it's the most fantastic thing that can happen to anyone.
Now we have to start talking about people who have nearly done it.
Correct.
That have literally left their body and have experienced... I've never heard anyone tell me, and not that it hasn't happened, that this was a terrible experience.
A few have, but it's so extremely rare, the majority.
But I tell you what, I've never found a person who knows that they are in a near-death state. They're terminally ill, they have been hurt, or they have grown old, that they are not gripped by panic. Which, of course, brings on the death even faster, I think.
Well, it's hard to say.
Yeah. So, are we going to deal with fact or fiction?
Well,
are we
going to
deal with reality or mysticism? So, we've put a couple of things on the table for you to talk about tonight. And I want you to talk to Diane Morrissey about them, if you will, because she certainly knows a great deal more about this. She's involved with an international organization that has studied it. And you're not trying to develop any kind of hypotheses necessarily, but you're trying to look into the facts of the matter. What is being said? What is being done? And what is there for each and every one of us to learn from that. Diane, are you ready to go to the phone?
I'm ready.
Well, tonight our computer has gone out of body. I've gone somewhere. So we're just going to have to trust that this person will understand that you're on without me knowing who you are. Hi. Give your first name first, and please get into the question.
This is Fred, and I would direct this question to Diane.
Fine.
She belongs to an organization, and I was wondering, is there a chapter of this organization in L.A.?
Yes, matter of fact, as regional coordinator, we'll be setting up Friends of IONS, which will start December 7th on a Saturday morning from 10 to 11 in the Santa Fe Springs City Library. And there are seats for 100, and we urge anyone who's had a near-death experience or an event very close to this to come and share their experience and or just listen so that they can feel better about this. And we will meet every first Saturday of the month thereafter.
At the Santa Fe Springs Library?
Correct.
Okay. And I was wondering, do you know if like science has been able to duplicate this?
Well...
Or they can zap somebody with 40,000 watts, I guess.
Well, if they have the technology like to bring the body into like a near-death state and they could...
Well, let me share. Under hypnosis, three people have requested, as I did, to Dr. Moss, I mentioned when I first met her, and also Dr. Kenneth Ring, that I'd like to be taken back under hypnosis and share verbally maybe anything that I forgot and didn't remember from that marvelous experience. And in the three people that they have tried to do this with, not necessarily Dr. Moss or Dr. Ring, they discovered that these people went into cardiac arrest during hypnosis, because in order to go back to remember, you have to remember that you died. So the heart stops. So they really don't want to fool around with trying to take us back again.
Still don't know yet.
You got to remember the body, the mind is a servo mechanism. And you give it instructions powerfully enough, it will serve those instructions.
Well, isn't there any organizations out there that deal with out-of-body projections, like, I guess, Eckankar would be one?
Right, and there's also Bob Monroe and Jerry Gross, and
yes, indeed.
We get into that in some of my classes here in Southern California as well.
Those are all pretty good. They're not just a bunch of kooks out there?
No.
Frankly, I know I'm real.
Well, besides yourself.
Now, whenever you start dealing with people like Robert Monroe of the Monroe Institute of Applied Sciences, where the here they get more into the study and the utilization of the out-of-body experience under the most carefully controlled laboratory experiences that you can have. We're not dealing with kooks. We're dealing with a whole systems of doctors of psychiatry and psychology, along with Mr. Monroe and the rest of them. With Jerry Gross and Jim Vogt up in St. Paul, Minnesota, you're dealing with people that perhaps don't have that scientific approach that they have, and they don't have the great laboratories and the Faraday cages, but they have people who are very careful in what they are doing and what they are learning, and then putting that down for all of us to absorb.
The Monroe Institute has a Faraday cage?
Oh, yes, indeed.
All right.
There are a number of ways that they want to make sure that whenever you're going to go into the out-of-body state, remember your physical body stays here.
Right.
And they want to monitor it very carefully. They want to shield it from any kind of outside influences, which, of course, the Faraday cage can do. They will also use the suspension tanks with the salt water and all other things to make sure that you are in a true altered state of consciousness, not in any way affected by anything else, so that what you have to share in the experiences, which are very personal, because you can't get a monitor up there and watch what you're doing.
Right. So you would say the Monroe would be a good one to play around with?
I certainly wouldn't suggest playing around with what they have to do. It's very serious.
Well, it's under serious conditions. I shouldn't use those terms.
Right. I think that perhaps that's one of the leading institutions right now dealing with that.
I see. Okay, well, I guess that's about it for me.
All right. Thank you very much for sharing that with us. We'll be back to our callers in just a moment. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. We're talking about, basically, if we were to give it a name, the near-death experience. But that certainly just laps greatly into the out-of-body experience, which is a fascinating thing. I hope you want to read the next issue of Let's Talk magazine, because we will go quite deeply into the out-of-body experience and its meaning to you and me as we see it from this point of view. Diane is with the The International Association of Near-Death Studies, that's located in at Connecticut University. She's the regional director. She has been there and has dealt with how many hundreds who have been there, too. So let's go back to the phones. Hello. Who are we talking to here?
My name is Maria.
Hello, Maria.
Good evening, Bill and Diane. You're so interesting, and I understand exactly what you must have gone through.